Hello, Vashon and Maury Islands. This is History Worth Hearing, a production of the Vashon Heritage Museum. I am your host, Chris Austin, and we have an interesting show for you today. We have two Vashon Poet Laureates. We have a story on the rise and fall of Luana Beach Resort. And of course, we have island trivia. So let's get right to it. Here are the speakers for February's Museum Talk, Ann Spires and Sandra Noel. And as always, these interviews were conducted over Zoom, so I apologize for any auditory problems. All right, listeners, as promised, we have two guests here. They are the February Museum Talk speakers, Ann Spires and Sandra Noel. Let me first tell you that the talk itself is called Vashon Poet Laureates, The Importance of Poetry in the Life of a Small Community. And a little bit about them. Ann Spires was the inaugural poet laureate for Vashon Island. She serves as Vashon Audubon president and as a land trust staff overseeing volunteer stewards and compiling property baselines. She stewards the Vashon Poetry Post in the Village Green, and she writes signage for Vashon's many conservative parks. You can find out more at annspires.com, and it's SPIERS.com. And also we have the current poet laureate, Sandra Noel. Sandra works as a freelance illustrator and graphic designer, developing environmental education posters, brochures, exhibits, and interpretive signs. She's a poet laureate for Vashon Island for the years 2021 to 2023. Her poems have appeared in Buddhist Poetry Review and other publications. You can find out more at Noel Design, INTERP, interp.com. So, did I get kind of right on that?
You were great.
Well, that's the show.
Good one.
Oh, please tell me a little bit about this position of the poet laureate.
It all started in front of the pharmacy, and Ron Irvin drove by, and I had tried to avoid him because he would always say, "Ann, won't you be the poet laureate?" And I go, "I just want to write poems," and I would disappear. But this time he asked, and I said yes, very generously. And so he is sort of the god of poet laureates. But he is the creator. It was his idea to have a poet laureate. He loves poetry, especially David Wagner, who just left us to go to his reward. And he also writes some poems himself, especially wonderful ones about wine and winemaking. So my first duty was at one of the poetry fests. And then after that, after 2 years, I did get a certificate. And the certificate says there are no duties, there's no payments, and the current poet laureate does not have the power to suggest or appoint the next poet laureate. Well, time passed. And so when my 2 years was up, I reminded them. And I can't remember, I was on that committee, but eventually I was on the committee, and it was the other poet laureates. So every 2 years in spring, we get together and we bring poets. There was a little request at one of the readings that perhaps this the process of choosing someone should be a little more public and open. And so since then, we put out calls and emails and notices in the paper to nominate yourself, nominate somebody else. And so our last two rounds, there's actually been other people, because we didn't want to just nominate or consider people that we knew, because then it gets sort of insular and you're going to hear the same poet. Yeah, okay. Nepotism. So Sandra, what did you sign up for?
Somebody signed me up. I've been the latest one. They had a process by then where someone is nominated and then they give you a call if it's you. And I got the call. And Susan, the previous poet laureate, stopped by the house and gave me the news. So
they called you. I kind of assumed white smoke would come out of the chimney to say that it's been chosen.
Well, almost.
No, it's not that kind of job.
What the job is, like I said, it's It's an honor. Whether you're a closet poet or a poet out on stage every weekend like a musician, the you and the community recognize you as a poet among us. And each poet steps up or doesn't step up, and there are no duties. You can just continue writing your poems, or you can look around and continue the community work that you are doing, or you can find an umbrella organization like the O-Space or Vashon Center for the Arts or the Land Trust and say, okay, I want to do this whole program for the next 2 years and I want to get funding, which means that you go home and you write the grant. I mean, all those things are open. So Sandra, why don't you say what you've been doing? Because you've been quite busy in spite of COVID.
No grant writing, but we did reach out to VOV, Voice of Vashon, and have Jim Marsh put together a 11 poet radio show. And he took his time as a volunteer engineer and sat down with all 11 poets and recorded us all and then edited everything. And then we have one link to the recording and everyone is on that one. And then periodically they will have those people's work on the radio, which was fun. And then another one of the poets, Myrna Heck, has a Zoom contract she uses for her teaching. And so she agreed, I asked her if she would do a Zoom program for us for readings, open mic, because of COVID, poetry to me really needs to be spoken. And a lot of us used to get together at the Vashon Bookshop, and it was wonderful to hear all this poetry out loud, but we hadn't been able to do that for 2 years. And so with Myrna's help, for the last 3 months, people have been able to get together on open mic on Zoom and read out loud. Oh, so that's nice. Kind of where it is right now.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's been just invaluable to be able to keep up with other poets that we know. And just such a surprise when two or three of the people we've never met before. Mm-hmm. And so that means that the poetry, which is one of the things a poet laureate could do, is continually opening up that circle, not to like poets, but to different voices, different content, different ways of making a poem, and the open mic has really served that.
Well, I'm sure having the aggregation of poets, they really cross-pollinate with ideas and forms and you know how they do their art. Are there any perks to the job, like you know, good parking space or good tables at restaurants or
no. unless you have an ego that really needs burnishing and you can go around and tell people, I avoided it. And really didn't appreciate it till I started telling people off island, like at poetry gatherings or reading. Oh. And I got all this attention. People would go, oh, Vashon Island, poet laureate of Vashon Island. And my ego responded quite lovingly, you know, yes. And it made me appreciate the honor more and not to be so self-deprecating that, you know, I don't announce myself. But
absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, to be elected by your peers, it's got to be an honor. Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, and in Anne's case, also considering the fact that she's an incredible poet in her own right, duh.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, each of us is. And let me say the names of those who have been recognized. After it was Ina Whitlock. And I'll just say, bless her soul, and may she be happy. I'm sure she is in heaven. She was someone who turned up. She turned up for almost every reading I can think of. She was in the audience and she would say a word afterwards. And then Cal Kinnear and Lonnie Kaneko both served the same 2 years. And Myrna Heck followed, I think. And then Susan Lynch. Yes, I mean, Susan was the last one and now Sandra Noel. So from 2011, this has been going on.
So So seven. Cool. Seven is what I counted. So I actually had Cal Kinnear on my radio show, the Mostly True radio show. He came on and was speaking. It was very, very interesting. I wanted to ask you, on this show, often we will go to the archives of the museum and we'll get a newspaper from, you know, 1890. And we'll kind of critique it and tell what's in there and this sort of thing. And I often see that advertisers will use a small poem in their advertising. And I'm just wondering, this was way before any kind of auditory advertising, you know, no radio, TV, films, anything like that. I'm wondering if that was that short poem kind of a jingle of its day, this thing that's easy to remember and, you know, maybe funny to remember the product or service?
Poetry from 18, well, you know, the only thing I've looked at on the island is like the poetry in the newspapers, the Vashon newspapers. And it was featured. Poetry was part of the newspaper. The Beachcomber does a wonderful job of highlighting this in different series over time. But in the newspaper, most of the poems that were published were done in meter and full rhyme. And so in some ways, as modern poets, if good or bad, we'd look back on that and say even the poems were jingles. And and I think that many people, more than just poets, self-identified poets, wrote poetry. And poetry was, well, Agnes Smock was the editor of the Vashon Island News Record.
News Record, yes, correct.
Yes, and she was a poet. Her husband was a poet. And I'm going to read one of P. Monroe Schmock's poems. But they were very long during that time. Jingles would have been a blessing, I think. And so I'm just going to read one stanza. It's called The Vashon Island Strawberry by P. Monroe Schmock. 1926 radio. And he opens it by saying, "How dear to my heart is the Vashon strawberry. How deftly the good wife removes the stem slender, then rinses the dust from each berry's face. In pyramid piles, they rise from the platter while powdery sugar drifts into its place. Well, it drifts into canyons and devices at pleasure. While cream flows in rivulets yellow as gold, the cream and the sugar and berry united prove Solomon right, for the half isn't told." So it's the poem that appeared most between the ferries from the Standard dock to today, or to the Vashon ferry, was the North End ferry, were ferry poems complaining about the ferry poems. Complaining about not Californians, but other people coming to our beautiful isle. I mean, there's themes there that we're still doing today.
You know, one of the questions I wanted to ask is, how has poetry on the island, maybe the last 150 years or so, how has that changed in structure? Like, it's not jingles anymore, I would assume.
Sandra, you want to take it? Or?
Sure. I think it's changed in terms of poetry in general, as it is currently acceptable and perceived either academic way or as people are writing today, where, 100 years ago or even 75 years ago, a sonnet or a poem that rhymed was pretty much the common form. And nowadays, free verse is more what you see published. It's just a change that happened, kind of like the difference between visual arts 100 years ago or longer, changed from very much an illustrative style to more modern art. So kind of a transition like that. I'm making a comment, a kind of a comparison there, but I think it's similar. And today what we're really seeing more is free verse. Wouldn't you say, Anne?
Yes, and the big shift nationally came in the, you know, with tidy four lines, iambic pentameter, full rhyme, came like after the Civil War, a poem would be tidy. And Vashon Island's poets were two or three decades behind that. And then came Emily Dickinson and Walt Whitman, and really, really opened up the form, also opened up the content. So it was more sensual. It was hotter, so to speak. When it was contemporary, about contemporary things, it was more aggressive. I think that free verse does have a definition, but free, every poet, when they are writing, as soon as I'm ruining somebody's code. As soon as you put down the first word, and certainly after you put down the first line, you have a form. You have a form, whether you're breaking up the lines all over the page, or you're putting them together, or you're using prose and then a little bit of poetry, or you take one word. Even that's happened in haiku up until 1940 or 1950. Haiku was 5-7-5.
Yeah.
And now the importance is not the 5-7-5. Like in poetry, the importance is not the end rhyme and the iambic pentameter and the stanzas or the form that you're imitating. It's haiku is turned to where what is important is to deliver an image or a contrast within those three lines or two lines or one word that brings an awareness of something natural in the reader.
So I've always thought as poetry is kind of a condensation of thought. Is that a fair assessment? Saying a lot with less words kind of than prose?
Langston Hughes said it very well about how poetry, what was that poem, man? It's squeezed like the soul squeezed like a lemon. Drop by golden drop. I always loved that. How it was that condensed kind of word, you know.
Yeah, overall, but even a good essay is dense and concise and right on. But there's a difference between poetry on the page or poetry said before people. One gentleman on some Zoom night had the stupidity to say that the young African-American girl that read at the last Biden's inauguration, that wasn't a good poem. And everybody, you know, the little Zoom square sort of shook. And all I could say is that she knew what she was doing. She's a graduate from Yale. She knows all the iambic pentameters and everything that has been written and why it's been written that way. But she seized the moment. She gave us a poem. She stood up there and she delivered a poem that we could all fall into emotionally, appreciate, and hear in our ear the different poetry conventions that are American. You know, maybe Black, maybe beat. You know, I'd have to listen to the poems. Maybe storytelling. I mean, all those things. She had enough craft and insight as a poet to give us that poem on Biden's inauguration.
You know, my assumption is that poetry among authors it kind of waxes and wanes in popularity. What do you feel it's doing now? Are we having more poets? More poetry being written now or less? Or don't know.
Oh, no, Sandra?
Well, it depends, I think, on where you live. It depends on, especially during this period of time with COVID and lockdown and all of that, I've noticed in our community how people are kind of hungry for that sort of thing, to hear poetry, I know I have been, and to be making that a part of the political landscape too, or about what is actually happening in the midst of a pandemic. What's that recent publication now? I can't remember the name, but it was Unmasked or something. It's a very recent, a bunch of writings from some local poets here on Vashon about the pandemic and ways of kind of expressing that frustration and that whole problem poetically. Also political poetry. You know, there were the Beat poets and Ferlinghetti and all those guys years ago who spoke to politics, who raised questions politically. And I hope that comes around again in a very solid, very powerful way, because we need it right now.
I don't think that there's any more or less poetry. And I don't think there's more or, less poets. After reading Agnes Schmock and Mike Sutter's forwards poems that he finds, you know, before 1940 in his research in the newspapers, there was a lot of poets. I mean, if you're talking about Vachon, because Vachon, I'm making an assumption here, is there people came from all over the United States, but they had been through eighth grade, and eighth grade was a major accomplish, and eighth grade had debate teams, and they had what's called elocutions. Mm-hmm. They memorized their poems. They were products of the one-room schoolhouse, and they were well-educated in the humanities, in the arts, and the sciences. So I think that as the culture decided that poetry coming out of academia was the only poetry there was, and that was adopted by publishers, that it seemed like there were fewer poets. And now we have the power to publish, do media. We don't have to drive and get the ferry to go anywhere because of Zoom. And there's always been, you know, if I came in 1970, there's always been gatherings of writers. Some of them are for fiction, some of them for other, on Vachon. I mean, there I can think of three or four, and surely over time they change. I don't know if they change. We're still doing a haiku of, I think it's been 25 years meeting. And maybe Sandra has it. It has to do with the importance of it, the importance of the content, and the importance of looking at who the reader is, with the protest and the carefulness now about when we do write poems, that we don't adopt other cultures' stories, that we don't that we're careful when we're building our characters or our speakers within what we write, to make sure that we're not using stereotypes, that we're not insulting unknowingly other cultures. So it seems to me maybe that the energy of the poetry has gone beyond the Strawberry Festival to other content, and the poets hope to change the world with that.
Well, you know, when Sandra mentioned kind of activist poet, for instance, that reminded me of the activist songs that I grew up with in the 60s and 70s. Are the poet and the lyricist, are they kind of cut from the same cloth in that regard?
Oh, yeah. Good poetry is also good lyricism, I think.
Interesting.
I think the lyricist makes more money.
They certainly do.
I think you're right.
And I want you to notice around Vachon, the musicians have more fun because they're up there on stage. And I think about that. I think about that. Why do they have more fun? Why does it appear they have more fun? So the poet laureate of 2080 will solve that problem.
And I think the current one should, but that's just me. Anyway, well, thank you both for being on the show. You know, I think this is going to be a very interesting talk, and it's one I think that maybe people that don't do a lot of poetry or read it in their own life could find interesting to hear this talk. And it's on February 10th. It's a free Zoom talk. I believe it's at 7 p.m. Just go to the Vachon Heritage website and register. And as I said earlier in the show, listeners, this is Sandra Noel and Ann Spires, and they are current and former poet laureates. And I appreciate you both for coming on the show and giving up your time here.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, it's time for some island trivia. Let's see here. Question number one. In the spring of 1976, a famous rock band stayed on the upper floor of the old Portage Post Office building. Who was the band? Question number two. On November 11th, 1927, which was Armistice Day, now called Veterans Day, something was installed on Pioneer Place on the island. What was it? Question number three. There has only been one United States vessel named for Vashon. What was it? And question number four, a bonus trivia question, has nothing to do with our islands at all. I just learned it the other day and I thought it might be interesting. What is the only state that is pronounced with one syllable? You have 50 guesses. Now here's a little story about the rise and fall of the Luana Beach Resort. If you've never driven down Luana Beach Road, you owe it to yourself to do so. It's a winding road covered with a beautiful canopy of trees that makes its way along the north side of Maury Island. The name of the road is derived from the location of the Luana Beach Resort. And in the early part of the last century, we had many resorts on the island, including Liza Bula, Swastika Lodge, Madrona Lodge, Glen Acres, and the list goes on. The Luana Beach Resort is unique because its roots go all the way back to the Civil War, and it all began with a man named Frank A. Hubble. He was a Civil War veteran and, in fact, spent time in a Confederate prison camp during the war. After the war, he worked for a railroad, eventually retiring around the age of 60. With nothing but time on his hands, Frank decided, I'm going to build a resort from scratch in his 60s. So he bought some acreage from the Ogilvy family, and people said, this is a bad idea, Frank. It's hard to get fresh water. It's isolated. There's no roads leading to it. But it did have one thing that he really liked, and that was driftwood. He was an excellent carver. With this wood, he built 27 one, two, and three-room cabins. He built a 40-foot-tall Uncle Sam. He built a 6-foot eagle. He built a 3,000-square-foot pavilion for skating and dancing. He even built a replica of the POW camp he stayed in, because who doesn't want to revisit the horrors of war while you're on vacation? Rowboats were available so guests could go fishing, they could collect clams or crabs. He also had a restaurant built over the water and featured meals at Seattle prices. He even built a playground, which included a merry-go-round, a teeter-totter, swings, camel and horse rockers, turning bars, and ring jumpers, all free to the campers. You could get there from either Seattle or Tacoma for the princely sum of 25 cents on a ferry. And being so isolated, they brought in products like milk or dairy products by rowboat. However, when a passable road connected Luana to the rest of the island, the unique hideaway began to lose its mystique. Hubble sold the operation, and in 1927 he died. By then, Luana Beach Resort was on its last legs, too. The pavilion burned, and the hand-built cabins were eventually washed away by the tides, once again becoming driftwood. And how did Luana Beach get its name? Well, Mr. Hubble made a portmanteau of two of his former sweethearts, Lou and Anna, neither of whom was his wife. Not a strategy I would recommend. Now, if I named something after my first two sweethearts, it would sound like Keljoy, which sounds like Killjoy, which sounds like my first two girlfriends. On a side note, the resort was not the only business in that area. In 1908, Skullberg Powder Works began its operations. They produced about a ton of blasting power every day, some of it used on the island to blow up large tree stumps to make way for farming. Unfortunately, the business ended abruptly. An explosion killed Mr. Skullberg and five of his employees. They were buried in a mass grave as it was impossible to identify the remains. Okay, so that's the story of Luana Beach Resort. Hope you enjoyed it. Okay, time for some trivia answers. The answer to question number one, During the spring of 1976, the Canadian rock band Rush spent some time on Vashon, living on the upper floor of the old Portage Post Office building, just to the north of the Portage store. Carved on the wall is the word Rush. That June, Rush released All the World's a Stage, their first live album they recorded in Toronto. The music critic Greg Prato noted that the album demarcates the boundary between the band's early rock years and the next progressive era of their music. The liner notes include a list of thank yous, which include Peter Talbot and the Vashon Islanders. We thank you for your friendship and support and wish you success in all your aspirations. The answer to number two. On November 11th, 1927, the Vashon-Morey Island Pioneer Association unveiled a beautiful and appropriate monument to the memory of the early pioneers of both islands. The stone is ideally located on a small triangle known as Pioneer Place, near the quartermaster dock and close to the spot where a large party of the earliest pioneers first landed. Much credit is due to Captain F.M. Sherman, president of the Vashon-Morey Island Pioneer Association, for successfully carrying forward the plans for the erection of the monument. The stone is 8 feet high and weighs 3 tons. And the answer to question number three. The Coast Guard cutter Vashon, WPB 1308, was launched in 1986 and served out of Roosevelt Roads, Puerto Rico, for her entire career until she was decommissioned in 2006. The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Vashon was one of 49 island-class patrol boats, each boat named for an island. They were built for the Coast Guard, and it was one of 8 that were stretched from their original 110 feet length to 120 feet. This created a high-speed stern launching ramp and to modify the superstructure to accommodate mixed-gender crews. The modifications created structural flaws that led to hull cracks when driven at high speeds in rough seas. The Coast Guard Commandant pulled all 8 cutters, including the Vashon, from service and laid them up for disposal in 2006. There have been many ferries and Mosquito Fleet steamers named Vashon, Vashonia, Vashona, and Vashon Island, but this Coast Guard cutter is the only United States vessel named for Vashon. And the answer to the bonus trivia is Maine, the state of Maine, only one syllable. Until 1820, Maine was part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The people of Maine became disappointed for lack of protection during the War of 1812, so in 1815, the people of Maine began pushing for statehood, which came to a head in 1819. How's that for some bonus trivia? Well, that's it for our show. I'd like to thank my guests, Sandra Noel and Ann Spires. I hope you get a chance to listen to their talk. It's on February 10th at 7 p.m. Just go to VashonHeritageMuseum.org and you can sign up for free for the Zoom webinar. And if you get a chance, come by the museum itself. We have the Natural Wonders exhibit, which is very interesting, and we're open Wednesday through Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Thank you.